So Hare Krishna everyone, today we'll start chapter 5 summary given by Swami Prabhu. So he, despite his work schedule, he prepared nicely. So we'll see, we'll get some nectar from chapter 5 summary.
Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada and our teachers. Hare Krishna. So with this I go on to chapter 5. Action in Krishna Consciousness. Yeah. So, if you have been following the class, we have divided the class into. We have been following the class in dividing the chapter into 4 or 5 parts. So, the first thing is that how devotional service is better than renunciation. The second part is going to be the how that action is going to be done. Action in Nishkama Karma Yoga. And then we are going to find out who the actual doer is, and then we are going to see how we can attain liberation through the super soul, and that's a subsection of this, and how to attain the supreme is going to be discussed in 25 and 26. So 27 and 28, they give an introduction to Ashtanga Yoga, which will be covered in the next chapter, and chapter 29 is the verse 29 is the chapter summary, where we know who owns everything. Who's the supreme? Who's the CEO of everything in this world? So the first section, starting about how devotional service is better than renunciation. So to set the stage, you know, at the end of chapter 4, the Lord said he was talking about all kinds of sacrificial work and how it culminated in knowledge. Whatever sacrificial work you did and how it's going to give you the knowledge. But in the end, he kept on emphasizing it. But in the end, he said, come on, Arjuna, stand up and fight. Now, Arjuna is like, okay, do you want me to just focus on knowledge or do you want to work? So, he is asking for further clarification from the Lord. So, in essence, we know that work in devotional service is always better than renunciation of work. That's what Krishna starts out with. Because even though both lead to the Supreme and both lead to the same goal, the work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. So, if every chapter has an equation, this chapter has an equation, we can say that true knowledge, that is jnana, and plus action in that realization, in that jnana, will lead us to liberation. So, it's a simple equation. So, we need to know that the true knowledge, that is, we are the soul, we are not the body, but we are the soul. And that action and that soul is a part and parcel of the Supreme. We cannot ever be equal to the Supreme. Even though we are like in quality, we can never be one in quantity. That jnana and that action to the Lord with all love is going to give us liberation. So the next verse talks about Nitya Sannyasi. How can one be a Nitya Sannyasi? So the only way we can do that is when we do our work and we don't either like it or dislike it. One thing I was thinking about is in temple work, how they always keep stressing that all work is the same. The person putting away the slippers is the same as the person doing the cooking, is the same as the person doing the decorating the Lord in the altar. To the Lord's eyes, everyone is the same. So, and he doesn't hate or love the or desire the fruits of the action. He takes everything and gives it to the Lord, because everything is the Lord's anyways. And the Lord also says that Karma Yoga is the same as Sankhya Yoga. It's like the steps on the ladder. One is just above the other. So it's like the example of Mataji keeps saying, and Prabhupada she keeps saying that, you know, it's like you have to first find the root of the tree. That's like Sankhya Yoga, and then you need to water it. That is the devotional service, right? So, or we can otherwise say, you know, first, you know, we have to find. So it's like, you know, you have to do if you have to lift a stone while you are holding an axe. You can simultaneously either, you know, you can first let go of the axe and then pick up the stone, or you can do it both simultaneously. Our devotional service is making us do both simultaneously, Whereas, you know, if you follow Sankhya Yoga and then Karma Yoga, it's going to be like put one first and then do one next, and there is a period in between. So that's where the Mayavadis are going to have trouble, because, you know, so far they are doing dry analytical study, saying what about this, what about that, and it's all dry speculation. You keep speculating and you keep speculating, and in the end you try to start doing work. Then it's like, what about this work? Where is this going to go? What about that work? You start speculating on that also, and that's where they do not get the real joy of serving the Lord or the devotees. And that's where the Mayavadis fail. We have a few verses that I've tried to select from this section. So, So this I'm just going to read out, because this is from taken from the purports only. So what I felt was the chapter focus. So first thing it says is, therefore jnana alone is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of the spirit soul, otherwise there is no escape from material bondage. You agree? At least one person is agreeing. And action on Krishna consciousness, action in Krishna consciousness is never action on the fruitive platform, because we always give everything to the Lord. And then a few verses down there, we can also see this. Action in Krishna consciousness helps one escape the result of fruitive action, so that one need not descend into the material platform. And then the other thing is, action in Krishna consciousness always superior to renunciation, which entails the risk of falling. Well, if you just start renouncing and start sitting, I don't know about you guys, when you try to sit there, and even if you start trying to chat, I see that my mind is going here, there, everywhere. Try going there and renouncing everything and sitting there. Our mind is going to do all kinds of tricks, and we are going to lead the life which we actually can lead, and which is sanctioned in Krishna consciousness, and therefore, you know, neither have nor not have there when you try this path in renunciation without Krishna consciousness. So it's going to lead to so many problems. So the next section. So the next section is action in Nishkama Karma Yoga. So what are the necessary, and so this is, and I tried to do this like, you know, math kind of thing. I tried to say, okay, what are the necessary and sufficient conditions for devotional service, right? So that's what I tried to put in that point, but I don't know. So let's see how I give that equation. So I tried to do the same thing here. So the first condition is, you work in full devotion and your heart is pure, your love towards the Lord is pure. And therefore that makes you a pure soul, and this makes you control your mind, and therefore you can control your senses, because the mind is what is driving the senses to get all those material pleasures. And if we can focus the mind on the Lord, then the senses come in the way. So that is the only way when we can keep always working, but we never get entangled. It's like the spider that is walking around on the web, but it never gets entangled in it. So the mind is fixed on Krishna, therefore the mind is in control. The mind is in control, the senses are in control. And that is why he is looking to serve everyone. He has found the root of the tree, and he is seeing the leaves, he is seeing the branches, and he is seeing everyone. He is seeing Krishna in everyone, because it's the same tree, that's the Lord. Right? So he sees the Lord in everyone, so he is trying to please everyone. And as he is trying to please everyone, he is in a very humble service. He's in the mode of service. Therefore, when he's trying to please everyone, everyone likes him. So that is why it says everyone is dear to him and he is dear to everyone. That's what that verse was trying to say. So now the way we have to do is, we have to find out who's the real doer. There are three things that are there. One is the doer, the other is the work, and the other is the situation, and finally the endeavor and the fortune. Those are the five things: the doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor and fortune. But if you have your senses engaged in the Lord, you get no reactions for this, because the Lord takes this away. Otherwise, it's like a ball that you throw on the wall that will come back to you, whether it's good deed or bad deed. So, since the senses are engaged, but it's in the service of the Lord, therefore we are free. We are like the lotus leaf in the water. We are in the water, we are in the material world, but we are never attached to the results of the of our work, because we dedicate everything to the Lord. And that's what the Lord is now emphasizing. You know, you have to keep working. You cannot just simply renounce and keep simply sitting. That's not going to give you that. And I had one point is that, you know, you have to give the results to the, see, so when we all started working, we signed this contract saying that, okay, whatever work I do here, at least when I signed, joined Boeing, whatever work I do, whatever patents that I get, I might have my name on it, but it ultimately belongs to Boeing. Similarly, whatever work we do, it is the Lord's. We might temporarily take the name, but it's the Lord's. It always belongs to the Lord. It will always belong to the Lord. So, the action of yogis, the next point is the action of yogis. And the action of yogis is that they give up attachment. They act with the body, mind, intelligence and sense for their purification, so that they get the true love, the pure love for Krishna. They act to purify themselves. They purify themselves they purify the body from the soul. They do their duties. They purify using the, for us in Krishna consciousness, we have the four restrictive and the four prescribed activities, that to set an example. The action of materialists is always going to be entangling, because they are always after their results. They are trying to do an act so that they can get something better, and then it starts this chain of anxiety. Have I done this well? What if the boss doesn't like it? What if, you know, this doesn't work out? All such anxieties. We have no such anxieties, because we work with all our sincerity to please Krishna, and He takes away all that fear. Is that okay? Yeah. So I have some section verse focus. And this is from the purport. The difference between a person in Krishna consciousness and a person in bodily consciousness is that the former is attached to Krishna and the latter to the result of his activities. The Krishna conscious person has no anxiety and is therefore liberated. There is no duality for him. There is only one truth, and that is the Supreme Lord, Krishna himself, the absolute truth. And all that exists is a product of Krishna's energy, and therefore all is good. So now once you know that, everything is, you have no fear, you have peace of mind, and there's no anxiety. So the anxiety, you know, it makes us, even after we are done, we are not at peace, because thinking whether we did this, whether we did that, all that is gone if there is pure love for the Lord and you act in that consciousness. The materialist has no peace because of the dualities. He has a profit mentality. He's always, whatever he does, he's trying to say, okay, will this person like this? What can I get from this person? What can I get from that person? If I help him today, will he not help me today? It's basically, I scratch your back today, you scratch my back tomorrow kind of mentality. In the end, you all get only rash. So and he's always entangled, he's always going to be coming back again and again in some form or the other. And then you are going to suffer through the same thing, searching for happiness, you keep doing that eternally. There is going to be some point where you are going to go, okay, where does this all end, right? Okay, this brings us to the next question. Who is the real doer? So the verse 13 says, the living entity is not the doer. He is just the tenant in the city of nine gates, which is our body, right? We have our two eyes, the nostrils, the mouth, the two ears, genitals. So those are the city of nine gates. And identifying with this body is going to cause us a lot of suffering, because we need to know, at least by now we have at least heard it a thousand times, that we are not the body, we are the soul. I don't know when I will realize it, but I've been hearing it. I can also repeat it very nicely, but I don't know when I'll realize it, that I'm not the body, I am the soul. But we can keep doing it. And the only way to attain happiness is through regulation, the four prescribed duties and the four regulative principles, and not to forget our own duty as a father, as a mother, as a
wife, as a husband, as a son, as a citizen, all those duties that exist. The master of the city is the soul. The next point is, the spirit soul is not the doer either, right? But the Lord says that modes of material nature are. So the master of the city is the soul, the nine gates, he's the soul. He does not act either, but he does have desires. So he has these desires, and that is why he's facing the reality, the results of this action. So the Lord sets the system, and if you put garbage in, you get garbage out. So you put good things in, you get good things out. So therefore, the desire for us to act, that is what is giving us the reaction. The desire is the main thing. The material energy is what is making the work thing act. The Lord sanctions it. So we need to understand, let's see. Yeah, we get reactions because of the desire. If we understand that, then we can slowly let go of that, and then we can focus ourselves on the Lord. And we need to know that, at least as the older we get, we understand that we can never satisfy ourselves. So we have been chasing this happiness from what? Our childhood. We thought that we'll get happiness from sweets, we'll get happiness from movies, we'll get happiness from this, we'll get happiness from that. We tried all that, and so far I don't think any of us are successful, otherwise we won't all be sitting here, right? So we are chasing this elusive happiness, but we cannot satisfy ourselves because we want more. Whatever we get, we want more, and even when we get more, we are not happy. It's easier to satisfy Krishna, who only wants those few simple things, right? We know that shloka that Mataji always keeps referring to, patram pushpam phalam toyam, so simple, right? Leaf, flower, water, fruit, that's all the proprietor of the company is asking for. So easily we can give, but with true love we can give. And he's happy, we are all happy. So the next point is that the soul has desires, and these desires are inherent to soul. If we can just dovetail that to Krishna, we can always get that. But to go back to the point, who's the real doer? Soul has desires. Desires have, these are that inherent to the soul. They act with material, nature, with body, with all the things that we get. And then that's how we get our results. The super soul, who is always present in all of us, that this is going to tie in with the Suhridam, who is the well-wisher, who is the Lord, who is with us everywhere. Whatever form of birth we take, he is going to be there because he is our well-wisher. He is the witness and he is neutral. He is just going to set the system and say, here's the system, you know, now it's up to your desires. You put what you want in and you are going to get that. So we cannot blame the Lord for our saying that I got bad things because of you, Lord, because it is something that we did that is coming back to bite us in behind. The soul desires, the super soul sanctions, and the material nature facilitates. So that is the answer to the question, who is the real doer? So the spirit soul, now the next question that is going to come is, if we are the soul, has the desire, the material nature is inferior to the soul, and we know that the soul is what is called marginal energy. The material nature is inferior, the supreme Lord is the superior soul. So how come we are always confounded by this inferior material nature? It's because of the vastness of it. So we need to remember that when we are interacting with that, so we know that it's something is constantly trying to attract our attention to do this or to do that instead of focusing our attention on the Lord. So this is the point, that the super soul, the spirit soul, though superior to the material energy, still loses out due to the vastness of material energy. The Lord is Vibhu. Vibhu is huge, vast. Superior. We are Anu. And this is the point where we tie in with the Achintya Veda Abheda Tattva, where we are one in Lord, we are one with the Lord in quality, but never in quantity. we are but a tiny, teeny, minuscule particle of this huge Vibhu self, right? And we have to always remember what the wisdom that has been handed out. God, man proposes, God disposes, right? So once we act with this knowledge that we, our desires are the cause for our action, and the material nature is facilitating us, the Supreme Soul is sanctioning it us, we get the reactions for our desire. Where will this desire lead us? This act, this knowledge will destroy the nescience of our being. Just like the sun destroys all that is dark. There we can see everything more clearly, and that is probably when we will realize the leaves, the bark, the branches are everything but part of the tree. Once we get that enlightenment. So, I have chosen a couple of verses for our focus. The temporary body, I'm just reading from this. The temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of the variety of activities and their resultant reactions. He suffers because he identifies himself with the body in ignorance. He claims to be the proprietor, master, controller, though in reality he is neither. He is in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. Waves are tossing him. He has no control over them. The solution is to get out of water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. However, and further on he says, however, when one desires the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain to him and be eternally happy. Am I doing okay? Or?
You don't have to
I'll say. No, when I see absolute silence, I am like, okay, either I have put everyone to sleep so nicely. So the next section is the liberation through the super soul. So once we start acting, where do these activities lead us? And that's going to lead us to liberation through the super soul. So again, this part, again, I try to say that there are four things that are needed for complete knowledge and liberation. We need intelligence, we need the mind in control, we need the faith on the Lord, and he has to be our only refuge. The Lord is not going to come save us unless we make him his final refuge. We have seen two stories to that effect so far. One is the story of Draupadi, right, when she was brought to the Kauravas kingdom and her husbands did not save her. The person in status of her father, Dhritarashtra, did not save her. The gurus did not save her. Nobody saved her. She could not save herself. She was trying to protect herself with both hands. Nothing happened. Krishna, Krishna, she was calling. No answer. Nobody was picking up the phone at the other end. One hand she tried. Nobody was picking up the phone. She left both hands, and that's when the Lord said, and until we make him the final refugee, we can get the intelligence from Mataji and Srila Prabhupada that, you know, the Lord is the Supreme. We can even the most impossible thing, that to get our mind back in control, that okay, we can say, okay, this is bad, we can keep, you know, fighting our mind and we can bring it under control. We can even have the faith that the Lord, but until we finally surrender unto him, saying that you are my everything, like what Gajendra the elephant did, he's not going to come, because he's the kind of person that will not come until he is the only refugee. At least that's what I think. So once we are done like this, and everything is fixed in the super soul within us, we are fully cleansed of all misgivings through this complete knowledge. So the next verse is that famous verse. Vidya Vine Sampane Brahmane Gavi Hastini Panditaha Samadarsana. So it's like a Pandita is the one with a complete knowledge. He sees the Brahmana, the elephant, the dog, and the dog, the one that eats the dog flesh. Everyone is same because the Lord exists in everyone in the same way. right? But he also knows that just because the Lord is in him, it's not going to, that the stray dog is going to bite you, you will get what you get if you touch the stray dog, because it will act according to its material propensity. You try to help people and they don't react to it, this is the same nature, because that's their material nature, that's how they are going to act. So, but the person sees that in complete knowledge, saying that the Lord is there in everyone and he has to treat them with respect and with dignity. So then this leads to the other point that Srila Prabhupada mentions, that this is oneness in quality, but there is never oneness in quantity, because all these living beings, there's just 7 billion of us, just people, and you know, even think of that, with each of us the Lord is in there, and the super soul, there are 7 billion of us, so we can never ever be equal to Lord, because the quantity is so vast, because that's just human beings. Then there are several other 8.64 million species, or
6 million
species are there, and in that species several billions of living beings are there, in that the super soul is there. Even with all that, this is just a quarter of what is the Lord's creation, right? I think the 3/4 belongs to Lord in Goloka. With all that, people still think, the Mayavadis still think that they can become God, they can become one with God. This is never going to happen, because it's incomprehensible. So the next point is equanimity in mind. Equanimity in mind deals with seeing the results as the same, whether we get victory or we get lost, whether people like us or hate us, or it doesn't matter. All those dualities, you see through them with equal vision. You get victory, you're okay. You get lost, you're okay. It's okay. We did this, we got that. That's it. And we all know what is the real doer. We already saw that, right? So that is the knowledge. And this is one point that Mataji mentioned that I'd like to bring up here, and this is a point that scares the bejesus out of me, is that we should be as pure as Krishna to enter this kingdom. I don't know how many more janmas I can take even to even think of going there, let alone going there. So it's a daunting task that is left to us. But if we understand ourselves, we can be liberated even with this body, as several of the pure devotees have shown in their actions. So, if you have equanimity in mind, we can accept both pleasant and unpleasant things, victory, defeat, everything. We can take it with the same spirit, because we know the truth. Who is the real doer and who is going to act on it? Who was acting on it? Who was sanctioning it? And how it actually took place. Now, why are we bewildered? Because again, this is a point that we cannot get stressed enough, is that we keep identifying ourselves with the body. So the next point is that they are not attached to material sense pleasure, but they are always focused on the pleasure within. Usually we have been chasing our pleasure through our senses. This has always come back to bite us in one form or the other when we try to chase our pleasures through our senses. And that's why we end up in most of the problems anyways, right? And we know the example of what we learnt in DYS about how the senses lead us to our problems, right? The moth is attracted to the light, and that's just the sense of sight. It likes the light and it keeps going closer and closer, and it gets burned even though it's so closer to the candle. And even as it's getting closer and closer, it wants to stop, but its eyes wants that light. It keeps going in and it ends up in the fire. The fish, it can never control the taste. That is why at the end of the hook, it sees the worm. It tries to eat the worm, but it gets caught, snared in the worm, and the fisherman reels it in for its death and destruction. That's just a sense of taste. For the sense of touch, we know that how the he elephants are caught by making the she elephants rub against the he elephant and turning it on, and then it runs behind the she-elephant trying to catch it, but instead it falls into the big ditch dug by the mahout, and he knows the elephant is starved and he is now made to work as a slave for the mahout. And that's the sense of touch. The sense of smell is, we remember, the bee, even though it has the tail can go easily, penetrate easily through the lotus flower, it gets trapped in the lotus flower at night because it's so attracted to the smell of the lotus flower, and it keeps getting engaged in that smell and forgetting to breathe, and it finally dies. And that's why when the lotus flower opens in the morning, you find so many dead flowers. That's the sense of smell. And finally, that's the deer, where the deer, it forgets. The deer is usually very slick. The hunter tries to shoot it or hunter tries to catch it, it's always going to slip away because it can zigzag, it's very light, and on its foot it can always escape. But when the hunter plays some music, it starts listening to it and it forgets itself and now becomes an easy target. So this is just one animal each getting starved by one, getting into trouble with one sense. For us human beings, all the five senses are pulling in five directions, and there is only one way, right? The way is that, I'm deviating from this, but this is from what Mataji has been saying. I'm just trying to. So if we try to control our senses on our own, usually it ends with disastrous consequences because our mind is not in control. But when we start doing devotional service with great love and devotion, all the senses are automatically going to come under control. You try to say, mind, don't do this. It's like, don't think of a pink elephant example, right? You try to tell your mind, okay, don't do this, don't do that. It's immediately going to say, why not this, why not that? That's at least how most, at least my mind works. I don't know what. So, therefore, see, and you cannot say, don't think of nothing, as what Mayavadi said. Focus on, nothing, focus on this, focus. See, the only thing that can be as quiet and as calm is that, an empty vessel. You just put it upside down, only that will remain quiet. Our mind is always going to be brimming with thoughts. It's going to be brimming with desires. But instead, if we focus our desire to change our desire to serving Krishna, then automatically all our senses come in a straight line. It's like you pull on one and it all comes together. Whereas if you try to let the mind go, all the senses are going to drag us in five different directions. So, and that's when you have this, when you are focused on the Lord, you will have this equanimity in mind. You've already conquered the conditions of birth and death, and that's what I already said. And and here is why we often get bewildered. I also said that because we keep focusing on our body. It's like the example Srila Prabhupada gives about, furiously focusing the cage while, not feeding the parrot. So that's what we always tend to do. And the final point is that that's how the Krishna conscious person can conquer his own, all the desires, including sexual desires, because they focus on the Lord. And therefore, the senses come into a straight line. That is the point that I tried to get diverted from. And the second part of it is...
What is sages vision?
Sages vision is equanimity. Oh, he sees...
Okay.
He sees... Okay, so... Now the next slide.
You can go faster.
Yeah. I'm almost done. The next slide is that... There's only two more slides for me. So next slide.
I moved on.
This is the one. Okay, yeah. So what are the characteristics of the material sense pleasure, and why we should focus on this is that the wise men and clever men are there, and there are fools. There are three kinds of people. There are wise men, there are clever men, and there are fools, right? The fool never learns. The clever man learns by his own experience. The wise men learn from others' experience, right? The wise men know that these pleasures are temporary. They have a beginning and an end. And usually this pleasure is followed by pain. But the wise men are after this permanent pleasure that has no side effects or after effects. So usually when you see all these medicines that you see, if you ever switch on the television, they have one medicine, they'll have 10 side effects, right? So you see people are growing bald, they start taking medicine, that leads to heart condition. You start taking medicine for heart condition, it leads to paralysis. It's like you take one medicine, it has 10 side effects. For that 10 side effects, you take 10 medicines, which leads to other 10 side effects. There's no end to it, right? But the wise men are looking for the pleasure that is going to have no beginning or no end and has no side effects, no effects, and it's permanent. And another thing to remember is this: these temporary pleasures are available even to the lower forms as animals. We do the same things as animals. Eat, sleep, mate, defend. The animals are also doing it. So the wise men want to rise above that platform. And so we have to tolerate these urges, because we are going to get these urges. So till when do we tolerate? Till 40, till 50. The Bhagavad Gita tells us till death. Till the day we die, we have to keep controlling our urges. And it's very easy to do that once you know that nothing in this world is going to give us happiness. If we accept service to Krishna, this conviction will give us happiness and we'll be away from all this. And what are the qualities of the liberated person? This is verse 25. They are beyond dualities like pleasure and pain, happiness and sadness, etc. They have no doubts. Their minds are engaged within, focusing on the self, and thus on the supreme soul, super soul. And they are busy working for the welfare of others, not just material welfare but also spiritual welfare. Like, how do you save a drowning man? You save him, not his clothes. So therefore, the best gift that you can give is you yourself become pure, you try to get others into Krishna consciousness. And then I have a few verses that, because this is a big section, I have some two verses that are in focus. The first is, one who is fully Krishna consciousness is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings and is in perfect knowledge of in everything and concerning transcendence. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in outcast and the Brahmana. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the super soul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered as a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the stage of equanimity through realization of the self, he is liberated from a conditional life. Then one more. What are the symptoms of a enlightened soul? The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. He is perfectly well aware that he is not this body but a fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of God. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. This steadiness of his mind is called sthira buddhi or self-intelligence. And then the verse 27 and 28 lead to the introduction to Ashtanga Yoga, where they talk about where to focus, how to do all that. I didn't focus too much on that. And the final verse is the chapter summary, which is the formula for peace, which Srila Prabhupada propounded. Once you know that who is the master, who you work for, then you work without fear, and you should know who the master is, who is the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, who he is, and you can always attain that. So the only way for us is to, through Krishna consciousness, and working in that knowledge that we are not the body, we are the soul. I have one small story, Mataji, if I tell. So this verse that I read out to you, this portion of this, one who is fully Krishna consciousness is undoubtedly washed clean of all misgivings and is in perfect knowledge of everything concerning transcendence. So how is this possible? How is just chanting the name going to give us transcendence? I have a small story. So let's say I run a jewelry shop, right? I mortgage shop. If I run a mortgage shop, people are going to come in to mortgage gold often, right? So here I am leaving in the morning to the shop. My son has collected all pebbles everywhere. And as I am walking, I find these pebbles and I say, Surya, which is my sense, Surya, get these stones out of the way. It's going to poke somebody in the leg. Take these stones or put them in the trash. And it's mostly going to be going in trash because he's going to collect the newsletter. So you come out, I go into the shop and I sit there. And some kid has been playing around in the shop and they have dumped some stones here and there. And I'm like, the shop cleaner, I say, what is this? Why have you dropped all these stones here? You know, clean all this. People are going to come into the shop. Okay, clean. So finally, then it's all clean. Somebody comes in with the jewels and it's gold, right? Now I have to see whether the gold is good or not. So what do? I rub it on a stone, right? Rub it on a stone and I see whether it's pure gold and I give the money. So do I throw these stones also just as I threw those stones? No. This stone is set back in with that gold. Just like that, associating with the Lord will elevate us to the Lord, because that's the name of the words of God, the name of God is so pure, so powerful. That's all I have about that. Thank you, Mataji, for giving me the opportunity. Oh, one more slide is the last slide, don't forget that.
Yes.
Yeah. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada is very much smiling at all of you. So nicely studying his books.